taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you were every day American.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I have an exciting guest for you today. Yesterday we were talking about inoculating our minds against the hate and the tyranny that has become so present in the country these days. Well, today I have with me Joni Bryan. She is founder and executive director of the 917 Society. Welcome, Joni.
Well, thank you for having me today.
Oh, you're welcome. I was trying to remember. I think it was about a year ago we encountered each other, and I love the work that the 917 Society is doing. I'm doing all I can to help you. Why don't you tell the audience here, a little bit about the 917 Society, even where the name 917 Society comes from?
Absolutely. Well, we do appreciate all of your support, Paul. We really do. The 917 Society, the name actually is a date, a very important date in our history. 917 stands for September 17th, the day our Constitution was signed into law in 1787. So this year we're celebrating 234 years of our Constitution.
Yes, we are. So
tell
us a little bit.
It's exciting because, you know, when I started this, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, go ahead. Tell us a little, I just want you to tell us a little bit about what the 917 Society is and what you're trying to do.
Okay. Well, of course, I started this project really because I have been asked a very important question. I had worked at a retirement community, and one of our residents had ran for governor in the 60s. He had been involved in civil rights movement. He also was a constitutional lawyer, a brilliant man, very interesting man. And one day we were discussing a court case, and he said, "My dear, you realize it's unconstitutional." And I looked at him and I said, "I don't understand what you mean." And then he pulled out of his pocket a constitution and he held it up to me and he said, "My dear, when is the last time you read your constitution?" Now, when he said those words, it shook me to my core because I always considered myself educated, involved, I always voted, and yet I had never read the constitution. And so that question just kept me up at night. I'm like, why have I not read it? What's going on here? And that's when I started learning more about the Constitution. And I looked back, and the last time I really had anything on it was in eighth grade. I had a few bits and pieces. We memorized a few things, took a test in Mrs. Alexander's class in rural Alabama. And so that's really the last I remember, because in college, my degree's in science. So I didn't have American history or any of that in college. And so I thought, wow, you know, if I haven't read it, who else hasn't read it? So I started asking everybody I knew at work, from the CEO to the managers to the people in the kitchen. 99 out of 100 had never read the Constitution. And I thought, wow, there's a big problem. And this is not a problem that just started yesterday. This has been building for several generations of our kids. And so I decided that I had to do something about it. You know, I spent my early years as a social worker in rural Alabama. And I always taught my children, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of what, Paul?
The problem.
You're part of the problem. The problem. So here I was, the problem. And I thought, I really need to do something about this, but I didn't know what. So I started researching, and I learned that in 2004, George W. Bush signed into law Federal Mandate 108-447. You can look it up. And it says all the schools that get federal money are supposed to have a program on the Constitution on or around September 17th. But it's only two sentences. And the next sentence just says, basically, go to this website to get some information. And that was it. And nothing, you know, no funding, no real instruction. But it's there. And I thought, wow. So I started asking social study teachers all over, because I'd been married to a teacher for 26 years in public school, and I knew a lot of teachers across a lot of states. And I was getting the same response. Well, they didn't do anything for Constitution Day. Three reasons. One, a lot of them didn't know about it. A lot of them said, well, we would, but we don't have time with all of the testing and all the things they're expected to do. And then for some, it was just a matter of, I'd like to do something special, but you know, we just don't have the funds. And so I thought, well, what if we could fix all that? What if we made something fun, free, and easy for our teachers to support them, and also something great for our kids to ensure that our young people read the actual words of the Constitution? And so that's kind of how the 917 Society was born. And we've been going strong for the last several years. And it's been a real exciting project.
Well, you know, it's interesting because my story is fairly similar, right? I didn't know about the Constitution. I didn't care about the Constitution until I was challenged to read it. And after that, everything changed. But it's interesting because I've been trying, where I live here in Middle Tennessee, to be involved. I've offered to my local school district. In fact, I met, we have a new school supervisor, some new person over the district. And I met her actually at a county board meeting. And I handed her my card. She says, listen, I will volunteer. I will come in for free. I will volunteer to teach any of your students about the Constitution. You can make it formal, informal, whatever you want. And I never hear back. And it's so disappointing. But it's one of the reasons why I love what you're doing. And you have to tell us what it is the 917 Society is actually doing. But I was at your annual meeting last year, and I loved listening to what the teachers were doing with the resources you're providing for them.
Yes, absolutely. And we have another one coming up, our fifth annual Constitution Day celebration. Of course, it's on September 17th, which is on a Friday of this next year. So I hope you'll be at that one. But that's when we celebrate the success of giving out the Constitutions to the kids. And you're right. You know, teachers get a really bad rap. But I see the other side of the equation here, because I was married to a public school teacher for so many years, and I know how difficult their job is, and they have so many influencing to where there were a lot of days my ex-husband would say, you know, I can't even teach. I'm so busy with all this paperwork and this testing and all these different things. And so they have a lot of challenges. And so this is one way we can support our teachers with something fun and exciting that the kids can have. And the teachers love it because they're in teaching because they love kids and they love to teach. And the students love it. And I don't get to go into the schools often this last year because of COVID, but I do like to go into the schools when I can. And what I love is when they get their constitutions, you know, we have a beautiful blue cover with our pretty 917 Society logo. It's just a very attractive Constitution. And on the front of it, it says, you know, celebrating our Constitution and our U.S. citizenship. And then it has the date, September 17th, 1787 on it. And what's really cool is when we give it to the kids, the first thing, you know, we ask the teachers to go ahead and sign and date it and present it. We want to make it special. So when we place that in their hand, what's really cool, because I have a lot of questions of why don't you just put it on the phone? Why don't you just, you know, let them put it on the computer and you wouldn't have to raise money to print them and distribute them. But there's a very important reason why we place it in their hand. We want to create a connection. We want to create a sense of ownership. Not until I had that Constitution put in my hand, you know, when he asked me that question and I took the Constitution and held it and I realized, wow, this is what all the fuss is about. You know, this is it. And it's not very big, you know, it's just, you know, 48 pages. And I started reading it and he told me, he said, you know, the man who inspired me, he said, you know, it's meant for the average American to be able to understand. It is for the people. And so that inspired me to read it. And as I started reading it, I think in my mind, I always thought it was just this complicated historical text, you know? So I just kind of brushed it off. But after I really read it and I realized how easy especially, you know, go to the Bill of Rights. They're pretty straightforward. They're pretty simple. You know, they're spelled out.
Absolutely.
I was interested, and I heard a politician this week, or last week maybe it was, mention that the amendments aren't absolute. I'm like, well, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah.
It looks pretty absolute to me, but, I mean...
The chief executive of the United States, the executive power is vested in this man's hand, and he can't read the Constitution and say, well, when it says this, it means this, which is a pretty scary situation.
I know.
Most of my listeners are not familiar with specifically what 917 Society does. I mean, you and I have talked. I know what it is you do. I agree. There's nothing like handing the look in a child's eyes when you hand them the actual printed copy. But tell my listeners specifically what it is that is the 917 doing, and what's your goal? What's your mission? What are you trying to accomplish?
Okay. Well, we're wanting to make sure that every year, every eighth grader receives their Constitution as a rite of passage into citizenship, that they connect the Constitution with their citizenship. It's our guidebook for being a good citizen. And so we want to make this moment special for our kids. And so that's why we, you know, have the teacher sign and date it and present it. What's really cool is the kids, when they open the Constitution, they start asking fantastic questions like, why can't we pray in school? It doesn't say that in the Constitution. They'll say, well, why are we being told everything we say is hate speech? We have free speech. So the conversations that are started from this are so important. And then we have resources available online that are free, from Constitution Camp to lesson plans, you know, to all kinds of fun things, to videos. So we have everything out there we can find on the internet that's free. So if anybody has a resource that's not on our website, we'll put it on there. We have like the Bill of Rights Institute, some of their work. So we have a lot of different people. Hillsdale College, you know, we've been able to share so many things that are out there, the resources. So that is our mission, is to make sure that every year, every eighth grader receives their Constitution as a rite of passage. We want to make it special. And so our first year, we gave out about 25,000, our second year, 50. And then our third year, we gave out 90,000. So we were able to provide for all the kids in Tennessee. And then this last year, we gave out about 200,000 across three states. And now for this year, we're working to reach 14 states, 1.5 million kids. You can go to our website and see the states we're covering. But yeah, it's pretty awesome. And then next year, the Lord willing, we will provide to all 5.5 million kids in all 50 states. That is our goal, ultimately, to make this a yearly rite of passage for our kids. So eventually we will have a citizenship that has a sense of connection to the Constitution, because right now we don't have that, you know, and that's what we've got to create, is that connection to our kids.
It's that inoculation I was talking about. So the website, it's the numbers, the numerals, 917society.org, correct?
.org. Uh-huh,
yep.
That's
okay,
it.
Cool.
And people can go on there. We just got through having
I was just saying, I want to make sure that my listeners know where to go to see what's going on. I find it amazing that, you know, most Americans think the Constitution is too difficult to understand, yet routinely we have eighth graders that are reading it and going, wait a second, you know, if this says this, if the Constitution says this, why are my teachers, why are the politicians, why are they saying something different? If an eighth grader can understand
absolutely,
it, why can't a politician?
Absolutely. And so, and that's something else. We are very fortunate here in Tennessee that we have our legislators, a lot of them involved, and they even help deliver to the kids, which is really, really cool. So I love that, you know, we've got some wonderful ones here, like Senator Kerry Roberts. He actually was one of the first that got involved helping us to get known and introduce us to people like Congressman Mark Green. And of course, we've got Dr. Ming Wang involved and Lee Beeman and a lot of folks. But we also have just everyday average people like me, you know, that nobody knows. But, you know, we've got a ton of people that, you know, whether they donate $25 for the year or, you know, $2,500, everything goes toward printing and distributing and running this organization. And so it's really we the people. It truly is. We don't receive state or federal money. We rely on individuals, companies, you know, anybody who wants to donate. And we do provide for public school, private, and homeschool. So we don't make any distinction. Whoever wants to, whoever teaches eighth grade, you know, in whatever situation, we want to provide these for them. And we also need volunteers. So you can go to the website and you can volunteer. There's a space on there that you can volunteer. And we've already got the databases built for the nation. So we've already got all 50 states with every eighth grade class. So we've already got that done. And we had a wonderful volunteer help with that, Martha Leary, we're thankful for. And then we have a communications director who is a volunteer also, Marie Tillman, who's helping with a lot of that. So we're getting it done. But we are blessed to have great legislators here that support the project. And they even passed a law making Constitution Day, that whole week is Celebrate Freedom Week. And so we're working to get other states involved, because right now, as you know, Paul, the critical race theory and the 1619 Project, which have totally revised history, and it's not factual, it's just opinion. And so that's being forced into our schools. And the only way to stop it is for you to call your state legislators to let them know you will not have that in this state. I know Florida just stopped it. Tennessee this week is working to stop it. Idaho just stopped it. Arkansas stopped it. So it's going to take all the states. We're going to have to get involved state by state to push back against this overreach of our federal government, because that's not what the Constitution says. You know, all the powers not given to the federal government are given to the states.
Absolutely. And you're right. We need to not only oppose bad information, we need to provide good information, which is why, and again, going to the original document, here's Absolutely. The Constitution. In fact, you have the Declaration of Independence, you have the Constitution, and you also mm-hmm. have, I think it was a citizenship oath in your that
Absolutely.
That you
Absolutely. And that's a cool story. Yes, that's a cool story. When I was working on this project and designing, you know, what we were going to be giving the students, at work, I had two people come up to me. I had two from the Ukraine and one from Jamaica. And the two from Ukraine, it was very interesting. He was a lawyer and she was a concert pianist in their country before they came here. But they moved here to work in our housekeeping department and were thrilled to be here. So I thought, wow, how inspiring that they would leave, you know, the Ukraine with all their education, and you know, they come here to work in housekeeping because that's how oppressive it was there. And so they were so excited to get their citizenship, and so they asked me to print off the test to get your become a citizen here. If you come from another country, you have to take 100-question test. But I printed off the test, Paul, and I looked at it, and I thought, I don't think I could pass this. And so they invited me to the courthouse. I was like, oh my gosh, to take their oath. And I was standing there in the federal courthouse, and I was watching people take an oath of citizenship. And I realized in that moment, I had never taken an oath. I had totally spent my life taking what we have here for granted. And I thought, wow, we have got to make sure our kids really understand. And so to do that, we have the citizenship oath. Once they get through their constitution studies, they take the oath, they sign, they date it. So it makes it more real. You know, it creates that moment in their education. And so we also offer videos. We have Dr. Ming Wang sharing what it meant like to come from communist China as a young man. He grew up there in the Cultural Revolution. So we have him speaking to the kids, telling them what it was like for him. And we're recording more stories. And we're also working on a Bill of Rights series, a video series. So we've got a lot of other things to help in the classroom to engage the kids and for them to understand what we have here. Because hearing from others who have experienced socialism and communism, you know, that's how we're going to get it through to our children, you know, what we have here, hearing those traumatic stories and seeing pictures from those times. And, you know, we can't wipe out history. You know, we got to learn from it.
Well, if we don't learn from it, we're doomed to repeat it. And, you know, it's amazing for a country that we hear is terrible and awful and racist, how many people want to come here. And, you know, we're the absolute worst country except absolutely. For all the others.
And you know, it's really, absolutely. And it's really unfair. I have a lot of friends who are here legally, and I have a lot of friends that are here illegally. I do have a variety of people I've worked with over the years in different situations. But I can tell you this, the people I know who are here legally get very upset. Because by allowing the borders to be opened up, it's almost like a slap in their face, you know, because they did it the right way. And they get very upset and very angry when they see all these people flooding over the border. You know, they're not for that. And, you know, that is something that I think is it's not right, you know, for people who have gone through the correct process. Now, do we need immigration reforms? Yes, there are reforms we need, no doubt. But I do think that, you know, it's important that we take our oath of citizenship seriously. And for those who took that oath, to respect that, you know, to respect that by not allowing just anybody to flood in here and to not go by the rules the way, you know, the others have. It's just not fair.
Exactly. Well, we've got a few minutes left. Tell me, please, what are your biggest challenges? And, you know, you've already mentioned donations and volunteers. What can people do to help, and what can they expect when if they decide to engage with the 917 Society?
Okay, well, wonderful. Well, of course, funding is one of our biggest obstacles because we choose not to take state or federal money. So we have to rely on individuals. But people can go online, and there's every level you can think of, from $25 up, you know, to $10,000, whatever anybody can donate. It helps, because right now we're trying to raise about $350,000 to finish our goal, because it costs a lot to print and to distribute. But another way they can help is to volunteer. They can volunteer to help deliver in their state, in their area, and we can assign them to the schools they want to go to. So we do have that database built. They can do that. They can also share with others, share on social media, you know, get the word out there, let people know, let their teachers know in their district. We're sending out letters and we're trying to let everybody know, but sometimes it's easy for things to, you know, bounce back on an email or, you know, so it's great if they can, you know, engage and to call their state legislators. Anybody listening to this, call your legislator and say, we don't want the 1619 Project. We want the Constitution in our schools. We want the 917 Society to give our kids constitutions. You know, so I think that's important, too. And also, for everyone out here listening, we've got to get more people involved in our school boards. You know, we really need to have more people get involved in local elections, because that's where things really make an impact on your daily life, is your city, your county, your state, your school boards, your commission, county commissions, those type of things. It's important to get people, you know, that share your values that are in office. And so that's also important. But I hope that we can get more people involved at the 917 Society. We welcome everyone who loves our country and loves our Constitution. We're nonpartisan. We just want everyone who loves what we have here, loves this country, and wants to support our kids growing up, loving this, or their citizenship, loving this country.
That's wonderful. And one quick question. You mentioned homeschool families. How does a homeschool mm-hmm. family engage since they're not going to get the Constitution through a school?
I have several homeschool boards I send them to, and they distribute, but, and I have sent individual ones out, but they can get their constitution, just write us and we'll send them. And then they can go online and print off lesson plans, you know, use some of the videos. So there are ways on the website that they can use all that stuff free, but they just have to write us, you know, they just get online and send us a note. And it'll come to us and we'll mail it out. In fact, I'm shipping out some today. Well, even though we focus on Constitution Day all year long, I have requests, you know, so I'm always shipping them out. But we love sharing them. I tell everybody they don't do any good in a box. So we need to get them out of the box and get them, you know, get them in front of people.
You know, Joni, it's been wonderful the time I've been involved with you guys. I really do support what 917 Society is doing, the idea of teaching the rising generation to be free, to give them the tools, because Government schools are not doing it. Government actors are not doing it. If we want the next generation to be free, it's up to us to teach them. And it's not as hard as we've been led to believe. I'm the same way. I love handing out your stuff. I love getting people engaged and seeing the look on children's faces. I want to thank you for your time, Joni. For those out there, please head to 917society.org. It's 917 Society. The number's 917society.org. If you can donate, if you can volunteer, I know they would, Joni would, and the others would greatly appreciate it. I would appreciate it. But if you just need some information, that's a wonderful place to go. Joni, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Paul. And if anyone would like to have me speak, also email us off of the website. And I go to all over. I just spoke last night to a group and gave all the adults constitutions. So it's amazing how many adults have never had a constitution. So I love everybody getting a constitution when I go speak. So if you have a group, you need a speaker, just get in contact with me and I'd love to come speak.
Great. Thank you very much. And we'll be back with a constitution study after the break.
There was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutloud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Every day, we're everyday Americans.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. That's right, we're at the Constitution Study. I hope you're around for Joni's interview, Joni Bryan of the 917 Society. You know, the idea that John Jay put forth, our first Chief Justice, was that every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. And that interview showed so much. It's the idea of being exposed to the Constitution, actually sitting down and reading it, is what changed Joni's mind. It's what changed my mind to say, this is important. This is worth spending time and effort on. And the idea of teaching the rising generation to be free, to not simply let government and other officials determine what your children should read, what they should learn, but actually putting the Constitution in front of them. And I know we tend to pick on the education monopoly that is public schools. I mean, it's not a pure monopoly, but they have the vast majority of students go to public schools. And, you know, Joni was right. It's not the teachers. The teachers are being, in for the most part, the teachers are being forced to do so much work, so many things other than teaching the basics. The ability to help them, to give them tools that don't require extra work. It's something 917 Society does. It's something I try to do here at the Constitution Study. I'm very grateful, and I hope you will head over there and support her at 917society.org. But it brings up some other news articles that have caught my attention recently. We talked about critical race theory, this racist idea that your viewpoint, your position, your future is determined by the color of your skin. It is truly the reinstitution of racism by indoctrinating our children to judge each other by the color of their skin. And if your skin is white, you are to be hated. If you are a white person, you're to hate yourself. If your skin color is darker, if it's brown or black, or you know, then you're to be lauded. And I don't know, maybe you can do no wrong, that the world is against you because of the color of your skin. Forget any evidence. We're going to drill this. We're going to brainwash the next generation into believing that race is what matters, not the content of their character. And this is not just in what we traditionally call the blue states, the socialist states, the Marxist states. Parents in Dallas, a Dallas area school district, basically went to war with the school district. There were two candidate positions open, and they specifically elected people that were pushing back against critical race theory. Apparently, it was a rather controversial race in the Carroll Independent School District, and they said the parents didn't like the introduction of critical race theory into their students' curriculum. And, you know, just as Joni said, and I agree, we need to work. We need to focus first on local. So that's what they did. The parents elected two new members of the board because the school district was focusing on or embracing critical race theory. And apparently in 2018, a video went viral of two students singing the N-word in rap lyrics. Apparently, if you're black, that's fine. You can use such vulgarity. And the parents said, no, that's enough. We are not going to teach our children. We will not allow our children to be taught to be racists. We will not allow them to be indoctrinated this idea that race is what matters. So they did what they could. And the first thing they did, apparently, is they got together. They found candidates who would push back against critical race theory in the school and got them elected to the board. So let me ask you, first of all, do you know what your students, what your children are being taught? Do you know if they're being taught critical race theory? Do you know if they're being taught the 1619 Project, this false and debunked theory that America did not begin in 1776, but that it began with 1619, that it wasn't founded in liberty, it was founded in racism and slavery? And what I find most interesting is, if my history is correct, the first chattel slave, the first lifetime slave in America was owned by a black man. So it's, you know, we cannot simply hand our children over to anyone, but especially to government actors, and expect them to be taught properly. To expect them to be taught the truth. Because let's face it, government-controlled schools don't want free citizens. They want people, they want serfs that will bow to the power of government. But this idea of critical race theory has long tentacles. Apparently, a Madison, Wisconsin school has decided to institute separate but equal. Now, if you've been taught a little bit of American history, if your history to education was adequate, you may recognize that term. See, in the Supreme Court case Plessy versus Ferguson, they introduced this idea of what's called the separate but equal doctrine in 1896. A 7-1 majority said that separate but equal is just fine. And in the opinion of the court written by Justice Billings, he stated that even though the 14th Amendment intended to establish absolute equality for the races, separate treatment did not imply the inferiority of the African Americans. See, even though the court didn't specifically use the phrase separate but equal, it was this idea that if you're treated separately under the law, that doesn't mean you're not getting equal treatment under the law. And this was used to reinforce the segregation, again, mostly amongst the Democratic-led Southern states. Now, that wasn't exclusive, but that's where a lot of it happened, these Jim Crow laws, as well as this idea of, well, you have to have separate schools, separate libraries, separate water fountains, separate lunch counters. And I thought we'd gotten rid of this. I seem to remember Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talking about having a dream where he didn't want his children judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. But apparently, in Madison, Wisconsin, that dream is dead, or it's become a nightmare. Now, according to a Milwaukee-based public interest law firm, the district sent out an email inviting high school families to discuss, quote, all the police brutality and violence that is going on. Okay, that doesn't sound like a bad idea. Kind of depends on how they approach it. But what was interesting is that the school asserted that it was very necessary to have space for our families to discuss and process. And then it sent out two different Zoom links. One link for parents of color and the other for white parents. Have we really gotten to the point in America where we can't have a conversation among the races, where we can't discuss things like police brutality and violence without having to be segregated? The law firm sent out that racial segregation is never beneficial or benign. It is our hope that the leadership at MMSD take this opportunity to commit the school district to the principle of equality and end all racial segregation immediately. I absolutely agree. You cannot get rid of racism by instituting racism. But you see, that's what happens, especially when you have this idea of, well, critical race theory, where your being is based on the color of your skin. That's why I talk about inoculating the minds of our children with truth, because governments and society is now so obsessed with this idea of instituting racism in the name of doing away with racism. If you're having a problem wrapping your head around that logical impossibility, you obviously are smarter than a law professor or a school administrator. This goes on. The Virginia Department of Education is eliminating accelerated math courses before the 11th grade. I said, what does this have to do? Why are they doing that? Well, they claim to do it to improve equity and mathematics learning opportunities. All right, let's stop and think for a second. See, the Loudoun County School Board announced that it was going to, that the Virginia Mathematics Pathway Initiative is a sweeping initiative by the Virginia Department of Education to revamp K-12 math curriculum statewide and over the next few years by eliminating all math acceleration prior to the 11th grade. So now, if you have a student, middle school student, early high school student, that is really good at math, that is just, they understand it. I believe we all have something. We just understand intuitively that we learn quickly, that we excel at. Well, if that happens to be math, I hope you don't live in Virginia, because the Virginia Department of Education says it is racist to actually be good at math. When did they say that? Well, if the idea is to improve equity in mathematics, look at what they're trying to do. They are trying to make children who are unique creations into easily reproducible, same objects. You're not allowed to be good at math. You're not allowed to to be good at something because, what, it makes other people feel bad. Because not everybody of all the different races are good at math. Does that mean being good at math is racist? No. I know people, black people, Asian people, Spanish people, they're good at math. And trust me, I've met plenty of white people that are mathematically illiterate. But this idea of sameness, of uniformity, is destructive to liberty. You know, I'm reminded there's something very interesting about the Old Testament. When God told the Israelites how to make altars to worship him, they were supposed to use unhewn stones, unique stones. Each stone was a little different. I'm reminded of my grandparents' place. When I was a small child, my grandparents had a place, and the outside of the house was made up of stones that they had pulled out of the stream. And there was a fireplace made out of the stones that had been pulled out of the streams and set as is. They weren't cut, they weren't chopped, they were set as is. And it takes time and it takes effort to build with stones that are not uniform. Now I compare that to my house today, which is surrounded by brick. Now, does that mean there's anything wrong with brick? No. Bricks serve very useful purpose, but bricks are manufactured. Stones are created. The question is, do you want your child, your unique creation, do you want their skills, their abilities, their natural talents to be trimmed away in order to make them uniform? That's the question. To paraphrase Pink Floyd, do we want our children to be turned into just another brick in the wall? Now, there is good news. It's not every school, not every student has been indoctrinated with this nonsense. And there are students that are willing to stand up. I found an article about a student at Virginia Tech. And in her Nations and Nationalities class, they were to write a paper describing a hate group from the list from the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, understand, if you're not familiar, the Southern Poverty Law Center may have started out trying to help poor and oppressed people in the South. Right, basically, they are a political hit group. Anybody that disagrees with their political viewpoint is listed as a hate group. So I find that very interesting. Actually, what bothers me even more is the number of government agencies that use the Southern Poverty Law Center's group, their list, to identify hate groups. So this student decided to do her paper on the new Black Panther Party. And according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, the new Black Panther Party, quote, encouraged violence against whites, Jews, and law enforcement officers. So she wrote her paper. She submitted it. When she got her paper back, she was surprised. Her grade wasn't what she expected. So she emailed the graduate teaching assistant and asked why she was given that grade. And she was told that there were problems with her view of racism. Now, what was her view of racism? See, the teaching assistant wrote back, said, quote, to begin, we discuss in lecture that racism is a systemic issue-rooted power structure which have historically oppressed non-white peoples. As a result, white people cannot experience racism. Okay, let's stop that for a second. I would like to send this particular person, this teacher's assistant, a link to a dictionary. The dictionary definition of racism is a belief that race is a fundamental determinant of human traits and capacities, and that racial differences produce an inherent superiority of a particular race. That, by the way, comes from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. So if racism is a belief that race is a fundamental determinant, then what this teacher's assistant graded on was racist. Why? Because he said white people cannot experience racism. Really? White people cannot be denied a job, cannot be denied access to certain Zoom meetings, cannot have access to certain dormitories because of the color of their skin, because of their race? She went on to say, while the NBPP discriminates and has prejudice against white people and Jewish people, it does not engage with racism as a system of oppression and subjugation. So conceptual clarity is key. Yes, conceptual clarity is key, including understanding words. To say that the new Black Panther Party is not racist because they're black is racist. And I appreciate this student standing up and asking why. Because when she got that email, when she was told that white people cannot be racist, she reached out to her professor. And she expressed her concern that her grade was lowered because her viewpoint was different. Because she looked at the definition of racism and says, hey, racism is racism, regardless of the color of the skin of the person that's executing it. Thankfully, the professor sided with her. He agreed. He wrote back, I agree with you. As I understand your position, persons identified as white certainly can be subjected to racism. So notice what we have here. We have a student who has been inoculated against the stupidity of the concept that white people cannot be the victims of racism, and the converse being black people cannot be racist. Right? She's been inoculated against that. So when she wrote her paper with that point, pointing out the racist acts of a political group, the New Black Panther Party, she was able to identify it and write about it. And when she was docked points, she questioned and she went to the authorities, and in this case, the professor, and said, really, are you going to dock me because my point of view is different? The professor said, no. That did not start the day she wrote the paper. That did not start the day she got her grade. That did not start the day she confronted her teacher's assistant with it. That started years before. Now, whether her parents or friends or family, I do not know. What I do know is this young woman was inoculated against a stupid view, a racist view of racism. Racists don't want to be called racist. So they rewrite, they redefine the word so that they can be racist all they want and not be accused of it. And she stood up and she was supported. So when I look at the school in Texas that focuses on critical race theory, racism, indoctrinating, brainwashing with racism. When I look at the Madison, Wisconsin school that establishes, that's in growing separate but equal based on race. When I look at schools that want to keep children down, that don't want them to excel because it's not equal, I am happy to see a young woman, to see any young person stand up, question orthodoxy, ask the question, is it racist to judge based on race or not? To ask the question, am I allowed to have my own viewpoint? Or must I toe the line like a good little serf? Like the good little subject and do what I'm told? Or am I allowed to be free to have freedom of thought, freedom of expression. It's difficult to stand up to an authority figure, to stand up to a TA, to stand up to a professor. And we're not going to do that. Our children are not going to do that unless they've been inoculated, unless they have been given the confidence to stand on truth and right and oppose evils like racism, wherever it pokes its ugly head. To not give people a pass because, well, blacks can't be racist. To not give people a pass because they're a teacher's assistant or a professor. To not allow her brain to be washed with the anger and the hatred of racism, with the tyranny of you must think alike, you must become a brick in the wall. You must give up what makes you unique for the benefit of society. You must give according to your ability to those who receive according to their need. Do you see the common thread here? From the interview with Joni and the 917 Society and the need to expose our children at a much younger age than you would think. I know in Tennessee, what I've been told is that most schools don't teach the Constitution until they're a senior in high school. But we're seeing eighth graders that understand the Constitution better than the professors, than the teachers in their school, certainly than the lawyers and the politicians. Inoculating them against hate and tyranny. We see schools that are reinforcing this, K through 12, in colleges. And we see a small few, that are standing up against it. The parents in Texas that said, you know what, we don't want our children brainwashed to be racist. So yes, we'll run, we'll join the school board, we'll put in the extra time and effort so that our children aren't turned into racists. We see the student in college standing up and saying, no, are you telling me that I must toe the line or be punished because my viewpoint is different? These are important people. They are the few that stand up. But what about the rest of us? Will those of us who either cannot or will not stand, will we support those who will? Will we support those new school board members in Texas? Will we support this student in her fight against being brainwashed with racism in college? Will we stand up against those who want separate but equal? For those who want to dumb your child down so that someone else doesn't feel bad? That's the question. And though many of us will look at this as a big, heavy lift, something, a big ask, a big thing to do, it is. But it doesn't start there. It starts with educating our children. It starts with inoculating them against tyranny and hatred and racism. And that starts by first reading the Constitution, you and your children, looking at the warts, looking at the mistakes that we have made, recognizing, yes, slavery was a fact in the colonies, enforced by British law. But only two or three of the colonies really pushed to retain slavery once they declared their independence. And yes, we fought a war over the question of could states remove themselves from the Union in order to continue to oppress, to deny life, liberty, and property to someone because of the color of their skin. Because of a situation of servitude. We fought, we argued, we demonstrated in the 50s and 60s to eliminate separate but equal. To ensure that regardless of the color of your skin, you would be treated the same in this country. Even though the government said no. Remember Plessy versus Ferguson? Separate but equal was fine, according to the government. And now that those laws are gone, now that those ideas are shown to be the evil that they are, we have people resurrecting, like the living dead, this racist idea that you are the color of your skin. And unless we are willing to stand against it, unless we are willing to say no, to do what we can to make sure our children know better, regardless of what the government teaches, unless we individually do that, racism will continue to return in America, and our children will suffer for it. So I hope you found this interesting. It was a little different with the interview. I hope you found this show useful. Please head over to AmericanOutloud.com. Look for the Constitution Study. You'll find it under our shows or under the schedule. You can listen to me live. You can listen to me on the podcast. But most important, be in the know. Do what you can to secure America's future. And I'll catch you next time on the Constitution Study.